Hello and welcome to Books by Old Dead Guys. This is episode number 78. My name is David.
And I am Scott.
And we are glad to have you here with us. We are moving through Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices by one Thomas Brooks. And so, if you haven't been listening to the last few episodes, Scott, can you catch us up to where we've been recently?
Man, so this has been my favorite section of the book so far, I think. And I feel like I've said that about every section, but I mean it this time, really, because what he's after is just got his finger on the pulse of what we do as pastors in pastoral ministry. And it is, how does Satan keep people from doing the things they not only ought to be doing as Christians, but the things that will result in assurance of salvation and in spiritual growth and in hope, because we're built for service, right? Yes. And so what he's gone through is, so far we've done four different devices, four different tools in Satan's toolbox that he uses to keep us from doing those things. And we just finished last time device four. And so this time we will start on device number five.
All right. Device five. By presenting to them the paucity and poverty of those that walk in the ways of God, that hold on in religious practices, saith Satan, do not you see that those that walk in such and such religious ways are the poorest, the meanest, and the most despicable persons in the world? This took with them in John 7:47-49. Then answered the Pharisees, are ye also deceived? Have any of the rulers or of the Pharisees believed on him? But this people who knoweth not the law are cursed.
Okay. So by showing the two words, poverty, to show how poor the people who do this look, but also paucity. And that brings us to an important segment in our time together, David, that we haven't done in a couple of weeks.
It's been a few weeks.
Ding! Now it's time for the Puritan word of the day. The Puritan word of the day is paucity. Paucity is the presence of something only in small or insufficient quantities or amounts or scarcity. To show the scarcity and poverty of those that walk in the ways of God. In other words, there really aren't a lot of people in this world, David, that are doing the things that both Brooks and we advocate that they should be doing. The way is narrow.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And that's what Satan's using. He's looking at it going, wait a minute, the way is narrow. There aren't very many of these people. And look at them.
Look at them.
They're nothing to behold.
They seem to need more than they have. They seem to just not have enough.
Right. And so then Satan connects dots and says, well, maybe the reason there aren't many of them is because they're in poverty. So that's what he's after is. There aren't very many of them, and the ones that do this, they're now very much to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So
remedy one. The first remedy against this device of Satan is to consider that though they are outwardly poor, yet they are inwardly rich. Though they are poor in temporals, yet they are rich in spirituals. The worth and riches of the saint is inward. The king's daughter is all glorious within, Psalm 45:13. Hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he hath promised to them that love him, saith James 2:5. I know thy poverty, but thou art rich, saith John to the churches of Smyrna, Revelation 2:9. What though they have little in possession, yet they have a glorious kingdom in reversion. Fear not, little flock. It is your Father's pleasure to give you a kingdom. Luke 12:32. Though saints have little in hand, yet they have much in hope. You count those happy in a worldly sense that have much in reversion, though they have little in possession. And will you count the saints miserable because they have little in hand? Little in possession, though they have a glorious kingdom in reversion of this? I am sure the poorest saint that breathes will not exchange, were it in his power, that which he hath in hope and in reversion for the possession of as many worlds as there be stars in heaven or sands in the sea.
Mm, yeah. So what you can't see is what matters, right?
Yes.
It's the mantra, I feel like, of our church the last few weeks, to really think more on the spiritual things, to take the things of God more seriously. Because when you do, you begin to see them as greater treasures than the treasures of this world. So that's what he's after is, you know, look, I mean, yeah, they look poor here, but it's what you can't see. I think of Jesus, right? I have bread that none of you guys know about. And then, of course, the disciples go, wait, so who, let me get him some bread.
Who fed this
bread.
Guy?
We went to go get you some bread, have bread, you know, and we just miss it. And yeah. So that's exactly kind of the same sentiment of, man, we're working for what is unseen. Mm. And so the fact that Satan is trying to divert our eyes then to what is seen ought to tell us something.
Ought to tell us. Yes. Yes, indeed. So remedy number two, the second remedy against this device of Satan is to consider that in all ages, God hath had some that have been great, rich, wise, and honorable, that have chosen his ways and cleaved to his service in the face of all difficulties. Though not many wise men, yet some wise men, and though not many mighty, yet some mighty have. And though not many noble, yet some noble have. Witness Abraham, and Jacob, and Job, and several kings, and others that the scriptures speak of. And aha, how many have we among ourselves whose souls have cleaved to the Lord and who have swum into his service through the blood of the slain, and who have not counted their lives dear unto them, that they and others might enjoy the holy things of Christ according to the mind and heart of Christ.
Yeah. In other words, it's not mutually exclusive.
Yes.
Right? It's not that just the poor will inherit the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not that just the ones who look meager and impoverished and, you know, exhibit paucity in this world will be the ones who will inherit the kingdom. But there are some who are wise, and some who are noble, and some who are wealthy, right? But even those people have seen all of those things as not to be compared with the surpassing value of knowing Jesus Christ.
Yes, yes. And he talks about the souls that have cleaved to the Lord, who have swum to their service through the blood of the slain, you know, right? I'm not entirely certain, but it almost seems as though he's talking about there are some among us who have given everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
For this, who have given their own lives as martyrs.
Yep.
For the sake of what they believe.
Yep.
They did not count their own lives dear unto them.
Yep.
But they gave all that up because of Christ.
Yep. Yep.
Remedy three. The third remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider that the spiritual riches of the poorest saints do infinitely transcend the temporal riches of all the wicked men in the world. Their spiritual riches do satisfy them. They can sit down satisfied with the riches of grace that be in Christ without honors and without riches. He that drinks of that water that I shall give him shall thirst no more. John 4:13. The riches of poor saints are durable. They will bed and board with them. They will go to the prison, to a sick bed, to a grave, yea, to heaven with them. The spiritual riches of poor saints are as wine to cheer them, and as bread to strengthen them, and as cloth to warm them, and as armor to protect them. Now, all you that know anything, do know that the riches of this world cannot satisfy the souls of men, and they are as fading as a flower, or as the owners of them are.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, it's good. In other words, we have things that will not fade.
Yes.
You know, the old adage that you can't take it with you when you die.
Yes.
Right? And what we have and what we labor for, we get to take with us.
And nothing in this world will satisfy.
No.
Nothing Absolutely. In this world will satisfy, but the riches of heaven
Yep.
satisfy.
Yep. I think of Tom Brady, quarterback for the Patriots and then the Buccaneers later, and I'm a big football guy, and I don't like Tom Brady at all, really. But said the most profound thing. He had won, I don't know, his fourth maybe, might have been his fifth Super Bowl. And the interviewers were talking to him, and they said, you know, well, you've won four Super Bowls, you married a supermodel, you're a multimillionaire. What do you have to say? And he literally, just in this moment of transparency, looked up and said, is this all that there is?
Is this all that there is?
And he had everything that almost anyone would ever hope for. And he came to the conclusion. I mean, it's like the writer of Ecclesiastes, you know, just speaking. Vanity of vanities.
All
is vanity. Right? Yeah. All this stuff is passing, man. 10 minutes after you die, people are going to be arguing about whose stuff this all is.
Yeah. Grasping for the wind.
Yep.
You just like... Just like you can't hold the wind in your hand, so too this world will not satisfy.
That's exactly right. Yep.
All right. Well, brother, you want to get remedy four? We'll get remedy
four. Yeah, let's do it, and then we'll call it. Sounds good.
The fourth remedy against this device is seriously to consider that though the saints, considered comparatively, are few, though they be a little flock, a remnant, a garden enclosed, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed, though they are as the summer gleanings, though they are one of a city and two of a tribe, though they be but a handful to a houseful, a spark to a flame, a drop to the ocean, yet consider them simply in themselves, and so they are an innumerable number that cannot be numbered. As John speaketh, after this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and peoples and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands. Revelation chapter 7, verse 9. So Matthew speaks, and I say unto you that many shall come from the east and west, and shall sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 8:11. So Paul, but ye are come unto Mount Zion, and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect. Hebrews 12:22.
Yep. In other words, we have to look at the whole span of the church and of history to really see how many of us
there are.
You know, that we don't know how many there are. I mean, even today, I mean, you think about just those who are living, we don't know
how many Christians there are.
No, we don't know how many Christians are in China. But we're pretty sure there are a lot more Christians in China than there are in America. We don't have how many there are in North Korea or Saudi Arabia or all these different places. Like, we don't actually know. Just because you're looking around in this culture and you don't see a lot of people that aren't doing these things does not mean that there aren't a lot of people that are doing these things. It comes back to Satan's trick to make us look with physical eyes and try to behold spiritual things. So it's just a reminder that we are part of a big kingdom, you know, and that's what rest of Revelation does for us. It helps us to see kind of as God surveys history, as everything is coming to a close, what John sees in the vision of Revelation, you know, that it's everywhere. It's all these people.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to be with. Heaven's not a place for just you and Jesus, right? It's a place where the gathered saints of God will proclaim the worthiness of the Lamb forever.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty great.
And thinking about that should spur us on to gather with the saints here.
Yeah.
It should spur us on to want to get together with other believers and worship the Lord, because that's what heaven's going to be like.
Yeah.
That's the picture that Revelation gives us.
And, you know, I mean, we're going to be perfected in heaven, and I get that. But there's part of you that wants to say, man, if you don't want to gather with the saints now, why on earth would you want to spend eternity with them? Right? If you don't want to be around Christians now, man, I got really bad news about heaven.
It's maybe full of them.
You're not going to like this.
It's chock full of them.
There's a bunch of them. Yeah. Every tribe, tongue, and nation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. Well, friends, thank you so much for spending time today as we read this book together. We hope it's been a blessing and benefit to you. If it has, would you pass it on to someone, this podcast on, or even this book on, to someone else who may benefit from it as well? We enjoy taking these books and helping us to see timeless truths from these people who are exactly where we just said, gathered around the throne, proclaiming the excellence of Christ so that we may learn from them. So hope it's been a blessing, and we will talk again soon.
Goodbye.